Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can go there, check out past archived programs and all kinds of other good stuff. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you?
Good. Good to have you back.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Did you have a good time?
I did.
Good.
I did. I'm glad to be back, though, but missed your show a couple of times. I know you have always good programs, so I'll have to check those out. But today, what are we going to talk about?
Well, it's first Monday of August, so that's the Morley Robbins show today.
The Morley Robbins. Marty Robbins.
we could get him to sing, maybe.
Right. You know, you're going to bring your ratings down to zero once I do.
Yeah, well, you definitely don't want to hear me sing.
Or me either.
I was in choir practice as a youngster at church one time, and the choir teacher asked me to stay after to practice. And boy, my brothers and sister made fun of me. And I think if they could have, they would have kicked me out of church choir, but I don't think that was allowed. I do not carry a tune.
Take all comers, right?
That's right. Well, Morley, thank you for joining us. We're excited to hear what you've learned over the past month. I've been thinking about, because, of course, Morley and I correspond in between these first Mondays. And so I was thinking about something. Unintended consequences is a term we use often in my world on this show at our clinic. I was on vacation this summer. The Grand Canyon is one of our stops on our RV trip with the family. And we watched the little movie that they play in the visitor center before we went out and looked at the canyon. And in that video, they talked about fire suppression and, man-made fire suppression techniques. Get in there and put out these big fires or little fires. Every time you see a fire, let's put it out. And the point of the video was they showed this these tree rings from a tree that they had cut. And I forget what type. It was some sort of pine tree, but this particular type of pine tree grew a thick bark that actually protects it from small fires. So these little fires that come through and clean up all the underbrush, and it burns these more mature trees a little bit, but they keep growing. And so they showed the tree rings from the 1800s and on. You could just follow it through time, and these tiny little burn marks on the tree rings back in the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s, and then it marked a spot on the tree ring where man had stepped in with this new fire suppression technique, basically putting out every fire that came along. And it showed this gap of no fires for a number of tree rings, and then all of a sudden a huge, huge fire mark on the tree ring. And it was a very distinct difference. And the point that the park ranger was making on the video was the way things happened naturally before man intervened were these small fires. We were down in that under all the brush burned up and the forests weren't so thick. And it just worked. It prevented the big forest fires from coming. Once man stepped in, though, with his fire suppression techniques, it caused too much overgrowth of the forest and a lot of dead timber and a lot of brush underneath the trees, and it would be this perfect storm for this huge, massive fire to come, once every 10 years. So they were trying to get back to nature, back to the way the original intent was with these small little fires that come through every year or two. It's just really interesting. Another, to me, what rang out was, man, unintended consequences. Man gets in there with fire suppression techniques, and our intent was good. We started off with the right intent, but without a deeper and fuller understanding of how God's original intent and design was, we screw things up. and I've gone on in my mind to list 7 or 8 other things. I'm going to be giving a presentation in November in Dallas at the Weston A. Price Foundation, and I think I'm going to lead off with unintended consequences, the man-made actions that may be good intentioned at first, but without a deeper and more mature understanding of how things really operate, we mess things up. So that brings us right into iron fortification of our foods. And I want to just review last month's show. If you didn't listen to it, I'd encourage you to go to our archives and listen, because that was a big part of the show. We talked about this iron fortification of our food, and we just didn't understand back then that the body only needs 25 milligrams of iron in a day in 24 hours, and 24 of that 25 milligrams comes from the iron recycling system of the body. So we only need 1 milligram dietarily, which is pretty easy to get with natural foods, both meat and plants. But iron fortified foods like Cheerios, and mostly it's the grains, but supplements and medications too, you can't forget about. But I think we talked about a bowl of Cheerios, there was eight grams of iron, or milligrams of iron, in just a one cup of Cheerios, much less two or three cups.
Half cup.
And then if you add toast, you add all, you know, then you have lunch and you have some spaghetti or you have a burrito or whatever. Just a standard American diet. It's full of grains fortified with iron. We're getting 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 milligrams of dietary iron in a day when we only need 1 milligram dietarily. The other 24 come from recycling. And so how I apply this in my thinking is the original intent was, knowing we'd only absorb about a milligram from diet a day, and we do need the capacity to store some iron, because if we got in a fight with a wild animal or another human, I guess, and we bled, we need to be able to pretty quickly grab some of that stored iron to replace our blood, because there's no blood transfusion in hospitals, you know, hundreds of and thousands of years ago. So we need that capacity to store some amount of iron and then to be able to utilize it as needed. But we were never intended to be exposed dietarily to this horrendous amount of iron. And we learned in the show last time that this dietary iron goes directly into the cell, directly into the mitochondria, and just wreaks havoc on the mitochondria, turning the mitochondria into a very, very inefficient carburetor, blowing out tons of exhaust and very little energy. And when the energy of the cell drops, we talked about, that's when all these bugs come alive. So the chronic Epstein-Barr EBV or Lyme or Candida or whatever bug you're dealing with will just wake up and go to town in this low energy cell. So this excess dietary iron is a big problem. We also discussed how copper, bioavailable copper, if you have enough of this bioavailable copper, you can kind of handle this iron. You for sure can handle normal amounts of iron, but even a little excessive iron, if you had enough bioavailable copper, I propose that we could probably even handle some excess iron. Not a huge amount, but the problem is none of us have this bioavailable copper. We've killed our bioavailable copper, mostly through modern dietary and supplemental techniques and fortification techniques, including ascorbic acid, supplemental synthetic vitamin D, and just stress and inflammation. All of this kills our bioavailable copper, and you've got to have bioavailable copper to do the recycling. 24 of the 25 milligrams comes from the recycling system. Recycling systems run off bioavailable copper. So it's this perfect storm, unintended consequence. We thought we needed more iron. It turns out we didn't. We need to improve our recycling. This is done with bioavailable copper, not and something we just don't have in modern society, modern food, modern lifestyles. Totally, totally diminishes our bioavailable copper. So that's a little summary and a little tidbit on unintended consequences. Morley, if you have anything to add to that intro, and then I'll talk about some other thoughts. A couple of colleagues made some comments this past week to me that I wanted to share with you. But first, let you get a word in, if you'd like, on that opening barrage.
Sure. I think one of the most important topics that we've discussed that you keep referencing, and I think it's an important clarion bell for people to understand, that at the end of the Second World War, the United States was considered, if not the healthiest, one of the healthiest nations on the planet, was at the top of any kind of World Health Organization chart. And now, some 70 years later, we're we're competing with some pretty interesting countries for the bottom of the heap.
Yeah.
So that in
like Croatia,
so
seven, I'm pretty sure yeah. Croatia is ahead of us now.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything against Croatia.
Let's all sing the national anthem of Croatia. but I think that's a striking change in our world status. Mm-hmm. And most people, by virtue of the amount of money that's spent in this country, would be surprised to learn that there has been that complete depletion of our standing in the world. And I've sat back to try to understand what changed? What were those unintended consequences? And here are five that I think reinforce what you're talking about that really have moved the spotlight away from Mother Nature and more towards some narrative, because there's a big difference between nature and narrative. And so the narrative that's emerged over the last 70 years is to look at a protein like ferritin as an indication of iron status, when in fact we now know that it's empty shotgun shells. And that what was used 70 years ago was hemoglobin, because that's where upwards of 70% of the iron was stored and used in hemoglobin. And less than 10% of the iron is used in ferritin. So we've lost this true north about how do we measure iron status. Second, we are encouraged to focus on an iron regulatory protein or hormone, excuse me, called hepcidin, which has 25 amino acids, and it's a negative regulator of iron status. And we're not at all informed about ferrooxidase. And that what I was sharing with Dr. Ben over the weekend was a very important article that revealed that there's a very hotly debated issue about, does ferrooxidase enzyme really do what they've been showing it's been doing since 1948? So for 60 years, that's actually 70 years. For 70 years, that's the very mechanism that regulates iron. And there's scientists and clinicians are still challenging that. We are told to focus on vitamin D, that's the be-all and end-all of our biology, when in fact the body runs on AND, and that retinol is instrumental and essential for proper iron regulation. But all the spotlights are on vitamin D. We are told to focus on hypoxia, to create this sense that we don't have enough oxygen, that we're all living at, you know, suddenly we're all living in Albuquerque at 7,000 feet, air's thin, and we don't have the oxygen, when in fact what hypoxia really is that the oxygen that should have been used for energy production is being diverted into reactive oxygen species because there's not enough bioavailable copper to activate the oxygen or stop the oxidants. So again, we don't know what the hydrogen peroxide level is in our body. It can be measured in both blood and urine, but that's not even a marker that's routinely on a blood test. And then the granddaddy of them all of the spotlights are on iron. That's the number one nutrient deficiency on the planet, which is intriguing, given that iron is the number one element on the planet. What that tells us is that the most evolved species, let's accept that we are the evolved species on the planet, that we have higher consciousness, that would assume we would have higher physiological function, and yet we can't even metabolize the number one element, but yet there's nothing that talks about copper. Nothing talks about the bioavailability of copper. And so though there are five key markers now where the message is, look here, but don't look over there with those other five markers. And I would contend that those are five good reasons why we went from top of the world to competing with Croatia, because there's a complete mismanagement and misunderstanding about how iron is regulated and kept in balance in Homo sapiens. So that's my addition to your opening volley.
Okay, that's great. So I just want to remind everybody, especially if you're a new listener, the mitochondria is just trying to, make some energy, ATP, magnesium ATP. And I'm really fascinated with Dr. Tom Cowan. Morley, I know you're familiar with Dr. Cowan and his books. Mm-hmm. I got an advanced copy of his latest book. I think it's coming out in September. Hopefully I can interview him then. But it's about cancer and the new biology of water is the name of the book. And he goes on to continue his explanation / theory on the structuring of the water inside the cell, how the water in your cell is really H3O2, a fourth phase of water that Dr. Jerry Pollack discovered at University of Washington 20 years ago. Dr. Cowan discusses Dr. Gilbert Ling's research that shows the ATP sodium-potassium pumps on the cell membrane. That's to pump sodium out of your cell, keep the potassium inside the cell so that the cell membrane can be charged, have a gradient there so it'll be charged like a battery. So this pump that pumps sodium out and potassium in runs off ATP. But Ling showed in his research that there's just not enough energy. There's not enough ATP to really truly do that work on the cell membrane. And the theory Dr. Cowan proposes, it's actually the structuring of the water of the cell. And he describes it kind of like a mosquito net or the screen on your window. The actual structure of the water molecules inside your cell act like this kind of screen that where sodium can filter out, but potassium can't. So it's like you let in the little gnats, but you keep the flies out because the holes in the screen are just the right size for that. And there's a lot of science behind that, but that's a basic layman's understanding of it, is this structuring of the water inside your cell is what really gives the cell energy and allows this gradient on the cell membrane to happen. Now, the pumps are there, and that sodium-potassium pump's there, but it's kind of like a backup mechanism, backup generator kind of thing. And his point is the structuring of that water, just like you're making Jell-O at home, you can take regular water, you put the gelatin in a bowl, and it just sits there. You've got this powder at the bottom of a bowl of water. Nothing happens. You've got to add an energy source, heat. And when you add that energy source of heat to that mixture, then the gelatin proteins start to change and interact with the water molecules in such a way it changes all these, the structure of the water, and you get Jell-O. Same thing inside the cell. Dr. Cowan's explained this mitochondria is making the energy. That is the heat. That is the energy, the ATP that it's making, the energy to keep that water structured, to keep that gel-like state and give the cell energy. So anything that disrupts that mitochondria's ability to make energy is going to affect the ability of the cell to make the structuring of the water, which is going to affect the entire operation of the cell. They showed a study, a cancerous cell, they took the nucleus out, all the DNA, the nuclear material, out of the cancer cell and transplanted it into a healthy cell, meaning the water of the cell was healthy. It was structured properly. And all the oncogenes, all the DNA, all the genetics of cancer turned off. That nucleus turned back to normal from a cancer nucleus with oncogenes turned on to a normally functioning nucleus with oncogenes turned off, just based off the intracellular water. And the point I'm getting at is this all feeds back to the mitochondria making energy to be able to keep that water structure, to keep all the operations of the cell working properly. And, of course, we can't forget clearing the exhaust, the reactive oxygen species Morley mentioned earlier, some of this exhaust free radicals that come out of making energy in your carburetor. You've got to be able to clear those and neutralize those. And you do that with antioxidant enzymes that run off copper. Well, excess dietary iron and not enough bioavailable copper disrupts this entire process where you can't make the energy, you can't clear the exhaust. And that brings me to the point that I wanted to talk about today, Morley, and get your comments on. there's some products available on the market called redox signaling molecules. There's some doctors that have been, I've listened to, that have been saying, hey, the free radical theory of aging is shot. It doesn't make sense. These antioxidants that we thought would save the world, that's not the answer. We actually need these free radicals. So some of this exhaust that's coming out of the mitochondria when you make energy, we actually need it. We can't just load everybody up with antioxidants. So do these, what they call redox signaling molecule supplements, which there is some truth to that. So here's my thought, and then I'll kick it to Morley for his thoughts. We do need some amount of free radical production. That's actually beneficial for us. We need the ability to make some inflammation in the cell. We need to be able to kill some germs. We need to be able to make some heat. We need to be able to create some fire. But then we got to come in and control that fire. That's the antioxidant enzymes. They've got to come in and be able to keep that fire under control, put the free radicals out after they've done their little job. There's some communication that goes on with these free radicals. Some of this exhaust is actually beneficial, helps keep the cell communicating well. But then we've got to deal with them. We can't let it get out of control. And it's the out-of-control free radical production, this excessive amount of fire that gets made because you can't put the fire out. That's where you step it up a notch into this huge oxidative storm and oxidative stress and inflammation that's actually damaging. So it's almost like there's a spectrum. In fact, Morley sent me a slide of this spectrum of oxidative stress. And part of that spectrum, when you get too far over, is this rip-roaring inflammation that's associated with every disease, from Alzheimer's to cancer to diabetes to rheumatoid arthritis to eczema to ADD and autism, and you name it. So it's a spectrum. We do need some free radicals. We don't need too many. This perfect balance inside your cell is what we're looking for, and that's where we keep coming back to: excess iron, not enough bioavailable copper. You got your teeter-totter out of whack, and there's no more balance. So that was a lot, Morley, from the structured water to the spectrum of oxidative stress to this free radical theory of aging's not a good theory anymore, according to some of my colleagues. So that
again, there's always going to be this debate, but I think we have to come back to the basics. We live on a planet with oxygen. We live on a planet with lots of iron. And, you know, several billion years ago, the planet was faced with a conflict because with oxygen, the great oxygen event started about 2.45 billion years ago. The planet had to come up with a solution. Because it couldn't, because all the 99% of life disappeared because iron and oxygen don't play well together. And that seems to be lost in the world of science and medicine. Iron and oxygen do not play well together. They never have. And what emerged were three solutions. One was the metal called copper. The second were what are called multi-copper oxidases, which is a profoundly important enzyme that turns oxygen into two molecules of water. So what does it do? Puts the fire out. As Dr. Liz commented, as I was sharing this with her, found some interesting research about that, she said, oh, so ceruloplasm was the first fireman. I thought that was very clever. So we have this natural fireman in our body to prevent inflammation. What is inflammation? It's heat. It's fire. It's a smoldering fire. It's not a productive fire. It's a smoldering fire. And so the third element that emerged a long time ago was cholesterol. And that's an oxygen sink because it takes 11 molecules of oxygen to make one molecule of cholesterol. So those are the basics. Those are the foundation of physiology. And then what we've got to do is, I just happened to Google the word anemia this morning just to see what pictures showed up. And it was fascinating. There was a series of pictures of women looking tired, different stages of exhaustion whether they were at work or in bed or trying to get their chores done. I don't know why they picked on women, but they did. It was just a series of pictures about women looking exhausted. And see, I grew up in the world and the generation of Geritol. That was before your time. And maybe Wade remembers it. I know that the 70-year-old farmer who sometimes steps in, he remembered it very well.
Oh, but Jim Stewart.
But the point, Jim Stewart, thank you.
He remembered Geritol.
Great, great, great man. He was fascinating to chat with. But the point is, we are programmed and have been programmed to believe that when you're tired, you need more iron because it's all a supply issue. Iron carries oxygen. Your tissue's not getting enough oxygen. You have hypoxia. You don't have enough oxygen. It's the whole narrative, it lines up perfectly. Until we find out that when you add iron in the food, as you were referring to, that iron goes straight into the mitochondria. And what most people don't know, and that includes doctors of all faiths and persuasion, is that depending upon the conditions, there can be a 40% loss, 60% loss, 80% loss, or 96% loss of energy production in the mitochondria, depending upon how much iron has been put into the mitochondria. That's a staggering series of statistics.
Yeah.
So 40 to 96% loss of energy from iron fortification because we think it's a supply issue, when in fact, for a fact, it is all about how does the cell and the tissue and the organ use oxygen? Does it have the ability to use oxygen? That's the whole issue. It's not a supply issue. It's all about utilization. And the thing is that the not focusing on that means you don't know about bioavailable copper.
Yeah.
That you don't understand that it is a utilization issue, and then that then begins to set in play a complete misunderstanding about who's really in control. And what's very important for the listeners to understand is that the mitochondria generate 90% of the energy that's used in the cell. And again, I think we have some dueling banjos here, and I can't wait to read Dr. Callan's book. But again, the classical understanding is that 90% of the energy comes from the mitochondria, and that's to run the ATPase pumps that you're talking about. But I think it's immaterial whether it's going to the pumps or going to this matrix, which makes more sense to me. But 90% of the oxidants, 90% of the free radicals are also being produced by the mitochondria. That's an important corollary to the 90% of the energy. So this one organelle, the mitochondria, and some cells have hundreds, some have thousands. A heart cell, cardiomyocyte, has thousands of mitochondria per cardiomyocyte. That's kind of hard to even think about how cramped it must be in there, but that's how important energy is. Because it takes a billion ATP to produce one heartbeat. That's a rather humbling number, a billion per heartbeat. And so when you start to add iron to the heart, it doesn't work so well. It doesn't pump as well. The energy field changes. And that's the genius of Jerry Sullivan, who discovered or developed the iron heart hypothesis. So the challenge in this discussion is getting people to realize is that iron is not the savior. Iron is a four-year-old with a hammer inside the body. And we've been led to believe that it is the salvation, and there's been very little press, very little discussion about what the planet and what Mother Nature has used to regulate iron. And that's called copper and multi-copper oxidases and lipids like cholesterol, because they're profoundly important for proper regulation of the oxygen molecule, which is really, that's the very essence of our life. We can't live without oxygen, but we can't age without oxidants. If we don't have a way to produce enough energy so that we can live, and if we don't have a mechanism to prevent or eliminate those oxidants, then we're going to age prematurely. And the leading theory of inflammation is now to call it inflammaging. It's an accelerated aging process inside our tissue. And what is the very mechanism of aging? Iron overload. Because as we age, our iron levels build in our body, and that basic biological fact is completely ignored or misunderstood by clinicians of all faiths and persuasion. It's the most fundamental fact of aging is we have more iron at death than we had at birth, and a dramatically different level of iron. And the level of copper is declining precipitously as we age. And it's just like it's the most obvious intersection of the metals, and they're the only metals that can work with oxygen. But the difference is iron carries it, and oxygen catalyzes it. Oxygen either turns it into
copper
into energy, or it turns it into a usable signaling molecule called a free radical. Well, right. That's a lot of blah, 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 so I'll stop there.
No, that's good. Iron brings oxygen to the cell and dumps it over, and copper is what allows the oxygen to be used and turned into that energy that we need to make your heart beat and make every other cellular function, every other cell of the body work properly. So copper is very, very important. We don't need much of it, but it's extremely important to not only be in the body, but it's got to be available. And maybe when we come back from the break, we will review that part, because there are some other doctors in the community or in the country that I interact with that are very much on the bandwagon of we have copper toxicity, and it's driving cancer and Alzheimer's. So we want to talk about that. We don't need much copper, but it's got to be in the right form. It's got to be working and available. It's got to be online, not offline. And so we'll discuss that when we get back. You're the Cure, Dr. Ben Edwards, and Morley Robbins, rcp123.org is his website. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. And let's go back out to the phone lines. Morley with us this morning on this Monday. Good morning. Welcome back in, everybody.
All right, we're back. Thank you for joining us again. I do want to point out, because we kind of get off on these rapid-fire scientific tangents, but Morley has developed this protocol, the Root Cause Protocol. Thus, the website RCP stands for Root Cause Protocol, RCP123.org. The whole point of the protocol really is to increase your bioavailable copper, to bring that back online instead of it being offline or absent. So that you can properly handle your oxygen, that iron, the red blood cells, and the iron that's in the red blood cells is delivering that oxygen. So iron's just the FedEx truck delivering the package. Or I think about at our new clinic that we've got this beautiful kitchen at our new clinic, and every day the delivery lady brings the ingredients, brings for our smoothies and juices and whatever the wellness navigators are preparing for the day. Sausage balls last week were awesome. So she's a delivery gal. She brings the raw materials in and drops them off on the counter or in the refrigerator, and then she leaves. That's what your red blood cells are doing. The iron carries the oxygen to your kitchen, to your cells, to your mitochondria. But then there's all the inner workings of the cell have to use that oxygen properly to create the energy. So your cell has energy to do what it needs to do. Well, that whole process of utilizing the oxygen appropriately to make energy is copper dependent. And so if your copper has been taken offline, then that oxygen mixes with this excess dietary iron from your Cheerios and whole wheat bread and spaghetti and tortillas. And that dietary iron that got delivered straight into your mitochondria, I forget which researcher, maybe it's Jerry Sullivan, Morley that talked about that dietary iron, excessive iron going straight into the mitochondria. So now you have this perfect mixture of iron and oxygen, and explosion occurs, and oxidative stress and free radicals. And then, again, the firemen can be there to put out these fires, but your firemen are also copper-dependent. Bioavailable copper has to be in play to put out the fire. So to make the energy and clear the exhaust, you got to have the bioavailable copper. However, there's a few in the integrative realm who are talking about copper toxicity and how excess copper is causing Alzheimer's and cancer and heart disease and things like that. And we need to chelate or pull this copper out of the body, I've heard from various doctors. So we need to... we've talked about that before, but I think it's worthwhile to repeat that again because today's show is a very, very good summary show. I think it's putting it all together for people to realize if you're low energy, like Morley said, he Googled anemia and saw all these women with low energy looking images. It's don't think iron. Think mitochondria is not working right. It can't make my energy. Why is it not making energy? Probably because I don't have bioavailable copper. But why don't I have bioavailable copper? So, Morley, let's get into a little bit of why don't we have bioavailable copper? Why is copper toxic and need to get rid of copper?
Well, great question. So we have the bookends to talk about with copper. We have this situation that environmentally, in at the same time over this 70-year period, we have this dramatic change in our health. What started in 1941? Iron fortification of wheat. And it's been added to many different forms of food. There's 9 different forms of iron that are being added to the food system. All 9, by the way, have been classified carcinogens. Most people don't know that. So we wonder why cancer is now knocking on the door being the number one cause of death. So the thing is, there's a very significant interplay between iron and copper. So some of the most important research around this is by Jamie Collins out of University of Florida in Gainesville, where he's been studying this meticulously for 5 or 6 years, maybe even longer. It's probably been a decade, to be honest. But supplemental iron dysregulates copper metabolism. That's an established fact. Well, then we couple during that 70-year period, there's been dramatic changes in our farming system. You know, there are many chemicals that are being added to the soil to stimulate growth but suppress mineral movement, which is fascinating, the most significant of which is glyphosate, which chelates copper out of the soil, out of the plant, and out of the animals eating the plants. So we have this dramatic macro issue playing in the background called GMO food that's chelating copper. Then the ubiquitous use of high fructose corn syrup, which is used in just about every processed food now because it's cheaper, wink, wink. But it's an unintended consequence because it blocks copper absorption in the intestine. So we are shutting down the availability of this copper. And then we find out that, oh, the number one nutrient deficiency on the farm is copper. We have this macro propaganda that the number one deficiency on the planet is iron deficiency, but the number one deficiency on the farm is copper deficiency. Do you think those two might be connected? Of course they are. Because the copper's not on the farm, the body can't get access to it to regulate iron so that there's a proper recycling of iron in the human body. And so iron looks low in the blood when, in fact, it's accumulating in the tissue. How long have we known that relationship? Since 1928. Actually, I'll go back to 1927. But the point is, we've known for 90 years that there's a dynamic interplay between copper and iron. And now we have the rise of copper toxicity and the hysteria around that. That was first propagated by Carl Pfeiffer, who was an MD, PhD, who wrote a very important book called Mental and Elemental Nutrients. And he's the one who moved the spotlight away from the dynamics of copper and iron to the dynamics of copper and zinc to completely confuse the world of science and medicine. And he was very successful in the same way that Ansel Keys was successful to divert people's sense of reason and to get them to believe that cholesterol causes heart disease. And so what Pfeiffer needed to do was convince people that it's that copper thing that's causing the problems. Forget about the iron. Let's not talk about iron. Let's talk about copper zinc. And let's get, look, the copper is unbound. Well, actually, it turns out there is no unbound copper in the body. Copper is always bound to something. And in the blood, 95% of it is supposed to be attached to the ceruloplasmin protein, which we've talked about, ad nauseum. And if it's not attached to that, it's either going to be attached to albumin or transcuprine or some other protein in the blood. But it's not going to be hanging out by itself. So this idea of unbound copper is it's absolutely false. Biochemically, it's fake news. And it's being blamed for all manner of problems, not the least of which is cancer. But the question that's not being asked that needs to be asked, how did the copper get outside of the ceruloplasmin protein? What changed inside the body and inside the organ and inside the tissue to allow that to happen? Has there been some breach in the structure of ceruloplasmin? And what we find out is there are many elements in the environment that are causing ceruloplasmin to fall apart, not the least of which is called ascorbic acid. And ascorbic acid, they knew in 1948 when they discovered ceruloplasmin that ascorbic acid would cause it to fall apart. The guys who discovered it, Holmberg and Laurel, wrote about it in their very first paper. This is a problem. And I've got seven other articles, preeminent scientists that have been studying this ascorbic acid breaching the ceruloplasmin protein to demonstrate that that's... You want to blow the ceruloplasmin apart? Introduce ascorbic acid, and the ceruloplasmin protein suddenly gets diarrhea, and it jettisons all the coppers at once, all six, seven, or eight, whatever number you want to use, but they all come out at once. And so then they are unbound to ceruloplasmin, but I assure you they're bound to something else. And once that copper comes outside of the protein, of ceruloplasmin, iron regulation is gone. Iron begins to build in the tissue, principally in the liver and the brain. But in any cancerous tissue, there's an accumulation of iron. That's a well-established fact. The best demonstration of it is in breast cancer. There's a five-fold increase of iron in the cancer cells compared to the healthy cells right next to them. So iron is, in fact, the bad guy. Again, all nine forms of iron fortification cause cancer. But yet there's a group of scientists that want to blame copper because they don't want to touch this iron issue because that's a third rail issue. Because there's been this long-standing movement to try to put more and more iron in our food and in our body. And what I just learned yesterday, it was fascinating. Someone was talking about, there's an article about seniors who get broken hips very often are anemic, wink, wink. Again, low iron in the blood does not mean low iron in the tissue. And so there's actually a preponderance of iron in the bone marrow. But standard practice is to give someone with a broken hip, give them an iron transfusion. That's the rigor. That's what is expected. And what this study revealed is, yes, that iron increases the reticulocytes. Those are the little baby cells that start to make the potential to become red blood cells, but they never mature, and there is no change in hemoglobin status when there's an iron infusion. especially in elders who have broken hips. And so this iron is, it's priming the pump, but because there's a lack of bioavailable copper, step after step after step after step that requires bioavailable copper does not get done. The red blood cell does not mature, or the erythrocyte, excuse me, the erythrocyte does not mature into a full-fledged red blood cell. And again, we have a classic example of lack of copper being the problem, not a lack of iron. And so this idea that there's copper toxicity is, it's based on an incomplete understanding of the dynamics between copper and iron. And think of copper as a wild horse. And Dr. Ben, I don't know whether you have horses on your ranch, but wild horses,
yes,
are beautiful.
Yes, they're not too wild, though.
Well, but you know how beautiful they are.
Yes, they are.
But they're useless unless they are harnessed, or they got to have a bridle. They've got to be trained to be usable. And when you put a harness on a horse, well, you can plow a field. You can bring a wagon to market. You can take a horse ride. And copper is harnessed, the energy and the elegance of copper is harnessed by these enzymes, ceruloplasmin being the most important. And if that harness gets violated by ascorbic acid, that's where all of the problems start. And the clinicians and the scientists that are beating the drum of copper toxicity are being intellectually lazy to not pull the curtain all the way back and ask, how did the copper get unbound from ceruloplasmin? It's the most important question that needs to be asked. What is the dietary, the metabolic, the environmental stressor that's causing ceruloplasmin to be violated, to get diarrhea, dump its copper, and suddenly we lack iron regulation? And all of the focus needs to be about, am I producing energy? Am I clearing the oxidants? If I'm not doing that, then I'm creating dis-ease, which then becomes a significant contributor to the aging process.
Okay.
How's that for an answer?
That's good. I'm going to summarize because I really want people to know the things that are taking your copper offline, taking that copper off the ceruloplasmin, off the ferrol oxidase enzyme. Ascorbic acid, for those of you who don't know, that's your synthetic 98% of all the vitamin C out in the world, I think, in both supplemental form and also added to foods. You know, orange juice is fortified with ascorbic acid, and other foods are too. So ascorbic acid is just a part of the whole vitamin C molecule. The entire molecule found in nature in food is very complex and has multiple parts to it, including some bioavailable copper in the whole food vitamin C. But if you just strip out the ascorbic acid part, or you synthetically formulate it, it has this devastating effect of kicking copper out of the ceruloplasmin. So does synthetic vitamin D. So do birth control pills and hormone replacement therapy. Many of the antibiotics, which I remind you, 80% of the antibiotics in America, anyways, that are produced in America are put into the food supply, mostly through the animals. But a lot of these antibiotics will kick copper out of the ceruloplasmin. Just the iron fortification itself, just eating this excessive dietary iron shuts down the copper's usability, as does inflammation in general. So all these things we're doing and how we're living and supplementing and eating and fortifying our food is shutting down the copper's ability to function inside the ceruloplasmin. On top of that, we're just not consuming dietary copper anymore. We didn't mention it's found in organ meats also, like beef liver. And then 80% of the copper is depleted out of the vegetables now because of the farming techniques. So we're not consuming enough of it. And we don't need a lot of it, but we do need some. And the part we do have in the body is getting put offline by all these things I just listed. So it's really the solution is get back to a more ancestral type of eating, or not modern. Let's just say that. Don't be a modern American, standard modern American. Get back to how we were pre-World War II when we were the healthiest. So, but that requires living and eating like we used to.
Real quick, if I may, I'd like to put Wade and Melody on the spot, because they're smart people. They've listened to us yammer for months and months and months on end. Actually, I guess we're going on years now. I'd like to know what they think of this give and take, this banter between us. Does it make sense? Are we clearly delineating where the confusion is and what the real solution is? Because if we can't convince two lay people who've listened to us, then we've got to change our tact. I'd love to hear from Wade and his lovely wife Melody to see what do they think. What's their reaction to this? And does it hang together? That's the real question. Is this penetrating and making sense?
Well, I think that it does make total sense to me. But I think for the layman out there, the question always arrives to, well, how do we get that? And how do we get bioavailable copper in our daily dietary situation? A lot of people, you know, we've heard that, well, it's really difficult, if not extremely difficult, to get it through a supplement, although you can get the bovine liver tabs, you know, in the powder form and all that kind of stuff. But one of the shows, I think, Morley, I think it was last month, we talked about shellfish and, you know, things like that, to eat more of that. I'm a big anchovy fan. I love to eat anchovies about two or three times a week. That may be a little more than what most people want to eat, but, you know, good organic beef liver, those kinds of things. But getting back to what our ancestors used to do, I think that's the key. And so for someone out there listening to today's broadcast, or any time that you're on, is, well, it does make sense to me, but how can I get it, and how can I get it in an easily absorbable way so that I can see good health benefits from it?
Yeah, and I think that's the key, is how do we reverse all of this? And that's really what the root cause protocol is designed to do. I really did it in response to an article written by Ray Peet. Is a wonderful article on iron dysregulation, and he said, to my knowledge, no one has ever come up with a diet to increase ceruloplasmin. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's an intriguing idea. Well, maybe that's what I'll do. And that's exactly what started that whole concept of the protocol almost four years ago now. And it's evolved and it's matured. I mean, it's still got a ways to go, but it's like, at least we have identified key sources of copper. We need the root cause protocol is really three broad categories. It's minerals, it's vitamin complexes, and it's nutrient dense food. And this is what our ancestors used to eat. Again, Weston A. Price knew this back in the 1920s when he and his wife were traveling the globe looking for perfect teeth, in response to the fact that he had given his son, his 10-year-old son, a root canal, and his son had died. And that's why Dr. Price was on a quest to find perfect teeth. It was a personal vendetta, because he was so tragic. He was traumatized by what happened. And so that's the benefit. He's turned water into wine because he was able to identify what those nutrients are. And this is a protocol that's based on ancestral food, but the sources of nutrients really come from organ meats and from vitamin complexes and from anything that is not processed. You know, you stay away from the center of a supermarket. If you're not growing your own food, go to a farmer's market, and at the worst case scenario, go to the perimeter of the supermarket, but never go into the center of it. That's the bullseye. That's where you're going to die, is eating processed food. And so I think what we've tried to do is simplify this And when people go to that website, rcp123.org, they can download the instruction manual. And it's right there. Do this, don't do that. There's starts and stops. And so we've tried to simplify this. I think what I'm just curious is the truth of the matter, the complex truth, is it penetrating the cranium of propaganda? Are people who have been programmed for most of their lives to think that they need more iron, are they really understanding that, wow, what I really need is bioavailable copper in order to regulate that iron, in order to regulate that oxygen molecule? That's the real issue, is I got to regulate oxygen. And there's only one metal that can do it, and that's called copper.
I think the listeners, I think we've resonated, and we've preached that enough and explained it in terms they can understand. I think morally what drives you, if I don't mean to be presumptuous, but the doctors don't get it, the scientists don't get it, the researchers don't get it. There's a handful that do, but not the vast majority. And you're in the science, you're in the journals every day, and so it's, I'm sure, maddening for you. But the layperson, especially the one listening here, I would think it resonates. And Wade, I've got to just speak to yours. How do you get this? And the convenience factor is always huge. So, of course, I'm going to put a plug in for our new VeritasMarket.com. But basically, we're going to put it all in a packet, a root cause protocol packet, maybe is what I'll call it. But it is the beef liver, the whole food vitamin C from Arceola cherries, just straight Arceola cherry powder with beef liver powder, with sea salt, with an organic green powder, and then the retinol from cod liver oil and a little extra magnesium, all in one packet, as convenient as possible. And that's not the answer. It's not like you just keep living a standard American life and take this daily pack and I'm going to feel like $1 million. Nope, that's not it. In fact, you should probably do the opposite. Do all the stops. Like stop the ascorbic acid, stop the birth control pill, stop the antibiotics, stop the high fructose corn syrup, stop the vitamin D, do all the stops. That's, I think, the most important. And, of course, your food, eat ancestral, eat local grown. And then thirdly would be the supplemental stuff, which, as easy as it can be, we're going to put it in this packet for you. But it's the whole thing. I think most Americans want to take a pill, you know, give me the answer in a package. And that's a piece of the answer. It's not the whole answer. So, Morley, I would say you've done a great job. I think together we've beat this horse as far as the explanation of we don't need extra iron. We do need the bioavailable copper, and here's how you get it done. It's the scientists and the doctors that need education. So that's my two cents on it. So,
All right.
We'll keep going.
Great.
Keep educating.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you again.
All right, Morley Robbins, rcp123.org and veritasmedical.com is all the archive shows. Check them out, veritasmarket.com, to get the raw materials. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.